Sally and I are back at it again. She's back from Google Summit. I'm in new offices, but we've got the same great technology conversations. Sally and I continue our publishing of a book for church and school websites, and specific to what do you put on those sites, the content. And today we talk specifically about the About Us page and the Visitor's Guide. All that and more. Stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 296, recorded on Tuesday, July 2nd, 2013. This is Martin Spriggs, and this is the show where we talk about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. Sally, I'm coming to you from a brand new set today.
That's exciting. Yeah, we can see out the windows there and the mirror that's behind you. I'm excited about the new Senate Administration Building. I'm coming to you from an old set. This is Sleepy Eye, just like normal. So,
for those of you that don't know, that's Sally Draper, Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. So the Center for Mission and Ministry, which is our new office name, no longer the SAB, but CMM West. We'll call it.
That's right. The center of technology in the western half of the states.
Huh? That's right.
Fun stuff.
So you're back from Google Summit.
Back from Google Summit and back from LWMS National Convention.
Okay, there's
well.
Been something in between the time between the time we did all those interviews and the time we're talking now. So how was LWMS?
It was awesome, and I got to meet up with some Wells Techers there as well. So technology and ministry intersecting all over the place.
Awesome.
Lots of fun stuff.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
And at Google Summit, when last we talked, it was only midweek of Google Summit, so I had the rest of the week to kind of geek out on some good technology. And I'm wrapping up my capstone project for the week, and I'm going to be sharing that on the podcast as well, because we all had to do Google Sites and talk about a particular topic. And I chose to talk about something that perhaps the Wells Tech audience will benefit from, and that's just kind of a site to overview going Google. So watch for that in an upcoming episode. But I have to share with you, Martin, that the Google Summit ended on a great note. You may remember that a few weeks ago we had Professor David Tess, who teaches at Wisconsin Lutheran College,
talking about our brain and the internet. Yeah,
that's right. And so it was his responsibility to do the closing keynote on Friday morning as we were wrapping up our week. And he did talk on that very topic, our brain and the internet, and how challenging it is to focus and how multitasking has kind of taken over everyone's lives. And he actually pointed us to an interesting website. It's a site done by Chrome, and it's all about a new way to multitask. And they even had a YouTube video there that we wanted to share on the podcast.
Hi, I'm Glenn Murphy, and I'm a designer on Google Chrome. When we're on the web, we're always trying to get more done faster. But research has shown that most people don't really save time when they try to do multiple things at once. On the Chrome team, we don't think this is a problem with people. We think it's a problem with the tools they have at their disposal. We realized that any one time while browsing, you're only using 50% of your hands. Why? Because you only have one mouse. Chrome multitask mode changes that by giving you access to not one, but two mice at the same time. At first, it might be a little tricky to get the hang of steering two mice, but after a short period of time, it feels completely natural.
As an architect, if I make a mistake, it's a matter of life and death. Multitask mode has taken the stress off, because I'm no longer thinking too hard about any one project.
We only have one computer between us, and we used to fight and fight over who got to use the internet first.
Well, now we don't have to wait or take turns anymore. With multitask mode, we can both check our email at the same time on the same computer.
Who's David?
Security is extremely important to Chrome, and multitask mode is no exception. To protect you from clicking on any link twice and accidentally double-charging your credit card, Chrome will automatically shut down your computer if your mouse arrows get too close. We hope multitask mode helps you get the most out of every minute you use Chrome. To try it out, visit google.com/chrome/multitask.
So, Chrome, is
that really possible?
Chrome multitask mode, that's like seeing the future there. I don't know. It didn't look like it was working too well for those folks. So fun
stuff. The funniest part was if the cursors got too close together, the computer would just shut off.
Yeah.
You can't cross the beams, you know, the Ghostbuster story.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. So I think I'm going to try hard to not need that new Chrome enhancement. I think I'll try to avoid that.
I have trouble with one mouse rather than two.
Yeah.
So, interesting. Cool.
I thought that was pretty fun and people would enjoy that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. And I've seen other Google things like that. They come up with that once in a while. So just to keep things light. Very cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, Sally, we are going to continue our book writing project. We are on, what chapter are we in? Is this chapter 3 now?
I believe so.
Chapter 3. We've covered a number of things related to website content. This is not necessarily technology focused, although technology is certainly involved when you're creating a website, whether it be a church website or a school website. But perhaps even harder than the technology sometimes is what you put on the site. And as you're building a church and school website, there are a lot of considerations, a lot of options. And really the heavy lifting is, you know, what goes on the site. So we've talked about the homepage so far, chapter one. We talked about God's word in chapter two. Chapter three, Sally, is all about letting people know who you are and what they might expect if they were to come and visit you.
That's right. And along those lines, we found an interesting article from the website Church Marketing Sucks called First Impressions Are Virtual.
Virtual, right.
And it just kind of gets into the fact that people are definitely looking at your church unaware to you from the outside via your website. And perhaps they're only going to spend 30 seconds on your website. And so what is it that they're looking for and how can you convey information about your church? And in particular, the visitor maybe is looking to find out what size church it is, what I'm supposed to wear to church, what happens during the service. Am I expected to give an offering? Some of those basic things about a church that you want to give people a feel for before they ever visit. And I think, Martin, you've done a really great job of capturing that in this chapter of the ebook.
Yeah, as we opened
kind
up.
Kind of a checklist.
Yeah, I was trying to think of how your mind should approach this whole thing of writing an About Us page and writing up, you know, a visitor's, you know, welcome page or whatever. And I think the first thing that's really important to do is to not just dive in and start writing, but try to build a profile of your potential visitor. So you kind of have to get inside their skin and think about all of the questions that a first-time visitor, whether it be to your church or school, whether it's a new parent or a first-time member or a first-time visitor to a worship service or Bible studies, get inside their head and what kind of questions, what are they wondering? You know, so if you were them, what would you be afraid of? If you were them, what are those, you know, top 10 questions that they might ask that you can answer on a website and then go through and systematically and honestly answer all of those questions. And hopefully you've come up with a page or two or different areas of the site that they can easily find and get some of those fears allayed and those questions answered.
Yeah, I think it's really important for people to get a feel, a vibe of your congregation or your school. You know, as I mentioned, what kind of dress is expected? Maybe people think, oh, if I go to that church, I'm going to have to dress a certain way or whatever. And also a lot of times they're concerned about their children and, you know, how their children are going to be invited into the church or whether they're going to be welcome there, whether there's a nursery setting for them or that kind of thing. On the school side, obviously parents are concerned for, you know, classroom information, for teacher credentials and things, but also maybe test scores and extracurricular activities that are available through your school and things like that.
Yeah. Yep. The kids thing, Sally, both you and I have raised small children, and it is a daily battle sometimes, and especially when you're in a public setting, Even the best kids have needs, let's call it. And what do you do with those kids? Are they, you know, is that going to be, are you going to be, is everybody going to turn around and look at you? Do you have a place to go? Those kinds of things. A lot of people have questions about the service format. Am I going to have to sing? Am I going to have to stand up at the end of the service and introduce myself? What happens when the offering plate comes by? What do I do with that? Is the service 2 hours, 1 hour, 30 minutes? How should I dress? Is this a casual environment? Would I look out of place if I were wearing jeans and flip-flops? Or do I need to wear a suit and tie or a dress? Those kinds of things are questions that the visitor has no idea of. You've been in this church for a long time or this school for a long time, so you know, some of these questions may not occur to you. Mm-hmm. A suggestion maybe would be to ask a first-time visitor some of the questions that they had when they came to your church. So, you know, don't go to the tried and true, the member who's been there 20 years. Find somebody who maybe just joined or who just visited. You know, they doesn't have to be a member of your church to help you out with this effort. Speak to a new parent or a parent who's just got a tour of the school. What kinds of questions that they had and maybe that the website could answer?
Yeah, I think those are great points, Martin. I'm smiling because I remember being new here at Sleepy Eye. It seems like just yesterday. It's been 6 years that we've been here. And I was interested in choir, and they don't typically advertise their choir. It's because everybody knows, what right. choir is, and first-time visitors don't know those things. So, yeah, definitely make the effort to get inside their head and make things easy for them.
And then speaking about, how you get that information to them, make sure it's really apparent on your homepage, where a first-time visitor or a new person to your site or maybe somebody considering visiting your school should click. Because there's going to be a page and, it can be a visitor's guide or a what to expect page or something like that. And there's obviously you can take that a number of different ways. You can do kind of an FAQ approach. You can have more of a running narrative. One thing that we talk about in the book, Sally, is to try and make it as an immersive experience as possible, because you want to give them a feel for what it might be like to be a member, to attend a worship service or have their child go to your school. So in order to do that, text isn't all that's going to do it. You need pictures. You need good images. If you can do it, you use good video. There's nothing really better than that, because that gives them a real life, so to speak, experience of what it might be like to be sitting there, to be there.
I love that word, immersive experience. And with that comes some challenges. And that's when you kind of have to shift over to your technology hat. But there are definitely tools for doing a great job. Maybe you do a photo collage, or maybe, like you said, Martin, a video or whatever it may be. But definitely not just a picture of the exterior of your church. Let them know that there's real people in there and that there's exciting, fun opportunities going on.
Be critical of your own photography or the photos that you're going to use. Don't just grab every photo that you can find of the church picnic or, VBS or whatever, and put it in a slideshow. Nobody really wants to sit through, Uncle Joe's, fishing trip, photos. So it's a matter of, being very selective. Make sure that they're of good quality, so that the visitor has just a good sense and has some good images to work with as far as, what's this place all about?
Yeah, Wells Tech kind of comes full circle. I'm thinking of presentations in and less is more, and keeping
that.
It simple. And the same is true here. You're actually doing a presentation to your visitor through your website and the content you choose to put there. So I think being selective is great advice.
Okay. So, Sally, how do people follow along with the progress of the book?
That's a great question, Martin. Let's see if I can share my screen and I'll even show you how it's done. Each week as I type up the show notes, I'm including a link to the special page that we've set up for this summer series. It's titled Church and School Website Content. And we are publishing our ebook in EPUB, MOBI, and PDF format, and also embedding the PDF right here on this page. And so you can get it in your favorite reader's format and follow along, read the great content that Martin's putting together in the ebook. There are links to sample sites. Right now we're working on our church sample sites, but eventually we'll have school and classroom sample sites as well. And we welcome you to just peruse that content and our layout and copy and paste it into your own site and adjust it to fit your needs if that's a help to you. And then again, as the series develops, we'll have links to all the different podcasts that are part of this summer series, all right here from this one page. So check it out in our show notes at wellstech.wells.net.
Man show. We really collaborate on this. I do the writing of the book, but all the ideas behind it and the list we put together, that is absolutely a collaborative effort. And then all the sample stuff, that's all Ms. Draper. All right. We have a little bit of news in tech this week, Sally.
We do. I've talked about all the different events I've been involved in. You've been moving that Senate office building there in the Milwaukee area. And all that time, there was a special conference going on down in San Antonio, Texas. It's the annual Education Technology Conference, also known as ISTE. And it's a huge conference. Thousands of people attend. And this year, one of the memorable events from ISTE was from our friends at Microsoft. Surprisingly, Microsoft chose to give away 10,000 Surface tablets at ISTE. So if you were in attendance, and I know Jason Schmidt was in particular, you could get in line and get your own Surface tablet for using in your classroom. Thought this was an interesting move on their part. Obviously, they're looking for educators to begin to adopt this and consider this as a one-to-one potential alternative or devices for the classroom. And this was a very bold way for Microsoft to do that. I thought that was pretty newsworthy.
Yeah, they're trying to get into that educational space. I don't know how much success they're going to have. I'm not real impressed with the Surface RT, which is, I think, what they gave away at ISTE, because you're really limited in some of the apps that you get, although it's a very quality device. I'm sure when Jason comes on the show, he can give us a review of it. I use the Surface Pro, which is the full version of Windows Plus, the touch apps. And I think that that is a very good machine. I've reviewed that, and that was one of my picks not too long ago. So I think the form factor is a good one. It's just a first, it's a first try, I think, from mm-hmm. Microsoft. And I think we're going to see more and more of this getting into the classroom. So this is a great time to be a teacher, Sally. I think you've got, you going through Google Summit, I think you learned to appreciate, the infrastructure and the ecosystem that is Google and the Chromebooks and how cool that can be within a classroom setting. We've talked about iPads in the past. Now we have Microsoft getting in the act. Just a lot of different options and, as we do our monthly classroom technology show, I'm sure we're going to be talking more about how to figure out what is the best option if you're looking to do this this kind of one-to-one computing stuff.
Right. And a good time to get a new tablet or a new Chromebook is in the summer. So hopefully the teachers out there that are considering this are just spending some time getting comfortable with it. And I think that's what Microsoft was hoping too, that they'd get comfortable with the Surface. So we'll see what kind of impact that has. I'm sure there'll be more articles to follow as people begin to use it more.
Very good. Let's move right along to our picks of the week. Sally, lead off for us, would you?
And I have a summertime pick for you. It's called Maker Camp, and it's done from the people at Makezine, and we'll have a link in the show notes to Maker Camp. It starts next week, actually, so the timing is just right. And basically what they're doing is a virtual camp around making things. It's kind of geared toward teenagers. And maybe geeky teenagers at that. But I think there's some geeky Wells Techers out there that might appreciate doing some make projects as well. They issue a project a day. I think it's only on weekdays from July 8th through August 16th. And they kind of go around a theme. Each week they have a different theme. One week is do-it-yourself music, and other do-it-yourself themes. And they've already published what their first week's make projects will be. So you could make a 2-liter motorboat or a rocket-propelled toy car or a bike-powered phone charger. And they go through and demonstrate how to make each of these things. And then they have a Google Hangout each day where they work through it and show you. So you can be part of a Hangout on a daily basis. Fridays are a special make day because they take you on a field trip to places like NASA and Apple and all kinds of places behind the scenes into factories and tech workspaces and things. So it looks like an interesting summer event to follow. And they have also some really good camp resources, which tie you to Google Plus safety information. And there's information for parents and for educators. And I think this is really worth looking into, not just for the MAKE project, but just in general to look at their safety guidelines. Obviously, they're only recommending 13 and up have a Google Plus account and participate themselves. But they do say if you're younger than 13 to work with your parents and use your parents' account with their permission. And so interesting safety guidelines that go along with it that I thought might be useful if other educators are considering doing any kind of Hangout kind of things with their students. So just a well put together site. They tied it into Google Plus. Obviously, they want you to follow Make Magazine for other maker kind of projects. And so they ask you to follow their Google Plus site in the process, which is pretty cool and has lots of good ideas on it as well. So if you're a DIY kind of person, then I recommend Maker Camp, which is coming up starting next week.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a five week thing, right, Sally?
Yeah, and they'll have, like I said, different themes each week, so cool. It should be interesting.
Lots of good stuff. Mm-hmm. My pick is a very basic one, and that is a search engine. And you've been moving, I think, more toward the Google universe. I've been moving in the Microsoft circles lately because of, you know, the Surface that I have and use it at work and such. And part and parcel to that is using Internet Explorer and their search engine, which is by default Bing. And I have to say that I've been pretty impressed with what they're doing with Bing. I'd been using Google for a long, long time, and switching to Bing was not an easy transition, but I like what they've done with it. And they've just recently redone it and launched some new things that are kind of exciting. One of those things that I wanted to share with you, Sally, was an image search. And Google has had this for a little while. Now Bing is doing it as well, and I think it's actually a little bit better implemented on Bing. So if you're doing an image search for something, for let's say your website, let's say you want a picture of I'll just type in the word cross and then go to their images area. And you're going to obviously see all the images. And then you have across the top all kinds of image categories, drawings of crosses, Christian cross, clip art, cross backgrounds, Jesus on the cross. So they're kind of anticipating what you're looking for. And they've added this toolbar at the top that allows you to search by size. So you can search from, you know, all sizes, small, medium, large, or wallpaper size, color. So just show me only a certain family of colors, black and white. You can search for whether it's a type of photograph or clip art or line drawing, the kind of layout you want, whether it be square, wide, or tall. If you want people, just show me images with just faces. So if you're maybe looking for an image of Jesus on the cross, you could select just faces. Dates, so you could say just show me the most recent photographs of crosses, past 24 hours, past week, past month, past year. The new thing that they've added, though, which I'm kind of excited about, Sally, is the license section. So if you hover over license, you can pick what kind of licensing the image might have if it is known to Bing. So you can obviously show all images, but then you can say, just show me those in the public domain, or show me those free to share and use commercially, free to modify, share, and use, and free to modify, share, and use commercially. So those are all excellent categories, especially if you're looking for something to put in a printed brochure or something on your website. And, you know, obviously you want to be mindful of copyright. So let's say I would select free to share and use, then it's going to give me a filtered down version. Over, it was almost a million photos. Now it's down to 22,800 photos. So now I'm seeing from Bing just those pictures that I should be able to freely share and use on my website. So that's just a quick and easy way to find photos that are going to be useful for me without having to kind of go through the whole copyright thing. They display it in a nice visual format. You can show it in a larger format. You can go right to the source of the picture. You can download it from here. It tells you how big it is, you know, the dimensions of it, what format it in, it's in, JPEG, GIF, PNG, whatever it is. And Sally, one thing for you, could you have a pin it button right here, so it can be sent directly to Pinterest. So,
hey, I think we need to pay attention to who's been pinning on Pinterest lately. Maybe you'll be using that feature as well.
We'll see later in the show, maybe. So that is my pick of the week, and that is Bing in general, but specifically, I would say the nice part that they've added here is that whole licensing feature. So.
Yeah, I think that was a pretty big topic for us at Google Summit, was being digital citizens that pay attention to those kind of things, and not just as educators leading the way, but teaching our students to use the appropriate material, not just steal content, which is basically what you're doing if you use content that does have copyright associated with it. So it's not as fun to have to dig a little deeper, and you may be more limited down from a million to only 22,000 options, but there are resources available out there that you can use legally, and that's important.
Yep, absolutely. So good tool for that purpose. Sally, we've got a lot of feedback this week.
We do. Something about not having a show or kind of delaying things made it all stack up. So I'm excited to share all this great information. Starting with Edity. Edity.com was shared with us by Rachel Pearson via our Google Plus accounts. And Edity allows us to create and share websites hosted on Google Drive. So you can edit your own HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript right from your Google Drive. And not just edit them, but also publish them in that format on your Google Drive, and basically have your own website built and hosted right there on your Google Drive. So this is somewhat geeky, but quite a potential great find for those that are into hand coding using HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. So
yep.
Check out Edity.
Don't need that hosting thing anymore. You've got it built right into Drive there.
That's right. So next up, I wanted to share with you an ebook that came out from my friends at Powtoon. And if you guys haven't checked out Powtoon, this is one we talked about at Google Summit. Mm-hmm. It is free to use to create cartoon, wonderful videos, just very quick and easy to make use of. And the head of Powtoon, he calls himself the Chief Unicorn. Interesting title. He wrote The Power of Cartoon Making, and it's in the special sauce, how to do cartoons well for marketing professionals, for small businesses, for trainers and educators. And I would add to that for churches who maybe want to put together a light video about something that's going on in their congregations. Certainly teachers, they've just came out with an EDU version as well. Teachers could work with this as a tool with their students also. So if you're interested in a quick little summer read, they have an ebook, and they have a bonus workbook that goes along with it. So they've divided their ebook in two and kind of give you some challenges to try things out and enhance your own cartoon making. Perhaps this is something you want to dig into this summer.
Cool. So you did talk about this at Google Summit.
We did. And, you know, I was quite impressed. Like I said, we all did capstone projects kind of to wrap up the week and support the fact that we wanted college credit for this week that we attended. And one of the ladies actually created a Powtoon and included it in her presentation. And, you know, it does take a little bit of work to get used to it. And one thing that's very precise about Powtoons is the timing. You have a timeline and you can, you know, zero in on a 3-second range of your cartoon if you want to do something special or whatever. It's very precise. And she did a great job with it. So I think it really spoke to the fact that you can get up and running with it very quickly and create something very nice.
Cool.
So, yeah. All right. Gail tagged an article for us via Digo, and it was titled VGA Sunset and the Problems Adapting with Adapters. And this has been kind of a topic over on the Wells Google Schools site on Google Plus as well. The fact that Chromebooks in particular only have an HDMI output.
Right.
And I learned something. I'm not that up on different outputs, but there is an advantage with HDMI in that the sound comes
carries
through
audio,
that
right.
as well. Mm-hmm. And for those of you that use VGA adapters, you know, you plug in and you get your presentation up on the screen, but the audio doesn't come through. And so maybe your dinky computer speakers don't support enough audio for the entire room. But with HDMI, you do get the audio coming through as well. So there's an advantage there. The challenge is many schools don't have projectors that support
HDMI. Audio
or
HDMI or audio, right?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so so there's a lot of little dongle kind of adapters that you can plug in, and it gets to be a little bit geeky and a little bit challenging. Maybe they don't work the greatest or whatever. And that's what this article is speaking to. I think Gail's point was, teachers probably don't want to use a Chromebook potentially for presenting, at least not yet, if their projectors
right.
aren't up to speed for that. And I'm not sure teachers necessarily have to be on Chromebooks, even if the class is on a one-to-one Chromebook, you know. But definitely using the Chrome ecosystem as the class is to stay in sync with
sure.
what they're doing.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you probably talked about that at the summit, if not in a session with other people as they were, you know, pushing Chromebooks into the classroom. But yeah, I'm not sure the Chromebook is the great teacher device, although the teacher needs to be very familiar and comfortable with it and maybe have one so that they can test drive what they're asking their kids to do too. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next up via Digo, a couple of links shared from our friend Tom Rosenau, who's a principal out in Pigeon, Michigan at St. John's. And Tom shared a link to an article, How to Add Tabs to Microsoft Office. And I guess I'm not up enough to know exactly what he meant, so I went over to this Office Tabs website that it linked to. It's a little plugin that you can get. And basically, it allows you to open your different Office documents in tabs as opposed to an individual
windows. Each window, right.
And when you click save, it saves everything all at once. And this works with Office 2010, 2007, and 2003. So goes back quite a ways in the versioning of Office. So if this is something you think would be useful to you with your Microsoft Office software, check out office-tabs.com. And thanks, Tom, for that find. Tom also hooked us up with an article called Sync Any Folder with Google Drive, SkyDrive, and Dropbox. And this is becoming more and more popular as people move to the cloud, being able to sync their folders. And so this article goes through and shows you how to do that, even setting up some automated Chrome type jobs that will run in the background. And so a little geeky there, but gives you some peace of mind that things are automatically backed up to the cloud.
Cool.
Yeah. We had an email from our Wells Tech Hall of Famer. I told him he was earning his title. This is Pastor Rob Gunther, who serves at Grace in Kenai, Alaska. And he's using something called ShareMouse. It's at keyboard-and-mouse-sharing.com. Catchy URL there. We'll have a link in the show notes. But basically, it allows you to share between two computers, the keyboard and mouse. And that's a really cool feature. I actually do that on my computer, not using this software, but using a hardware dongle thing that that allows that. But this is better. And I'm excited to try this out, because not only can you share your keyboard and mouse, you can drag and drop files between the two, even between Mac and Windows computers, you can do this. And you can also share clipboards. So if you're on one computer, you can do a Control C to copy something and switch to the other computer and do a Control V and paste that from one computer to the other. Again, it's a cross-platform, should work with Mac and Windows, and looks like a handy little utility to make use of. So check
cool.
it out.
I'm going to have to try that. We talked about, this was a long time ago now, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, when we talked about a similar product, and I can't for the life of me remember the name of it. I should have looked it up before the show, but if any of our listeners remember, I'll bring it up next week. But there is another program that allows you to basically move across computers, and I think it worked cross-platform as well, which is really handy. It's very mm-hmm. similar to this kind of a software KVM approach.
Mm-hmm. Pastor Gunther says this works great for bulletin prep. I do a lot less Alt-Tab to switch between my worship and spreadsheet, Logos and Word. Mm-hmm. With two computers working for me, he can just have it running on two different computers and do the drag and drop kind of stuff. So very nice tip. Thank you for that. Great. All right, Martin, I think you're up with your Pinterest pin.
My Pinterest pick.
Yeah.
This was actually something that I saw my niece share. There was a photo of a QR code in a frame on a wall. I said, what in the world? You know, that's not very artistic per se, and it's not something I'm going to put on my wall at home. But the whole point is, you know, The subtitle says, generate your Wi-Fi password as a QR code. Never get asked again. Great idea for a guest room. Or in our case, I was thinking of our conference rooms here at the new CMM, where we're constantly being asked for the guest password. Here is a quick and easy way to create a QR code that would essentially give them the SSID of the Wi-Fi and the password for it. So there it sits. It's kind of secure, I guess. You know, anybody with a smartphone can grab it and cut and paste it and or iPad, whatever, and away they go. So found that on Pinterest of all places.
That's a great find there, Martin. I'm seeing a lot more uses for QR codes these days. Seems like it's really gaining some traction now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we kind of were suspicious of it maybe a year or so ago, but I think it's become generally adopted now, and you're seeing it more and more places.
Yep. All right, next up via Pinterest, I pinned an infographic. This one is from an article by the Barna Group. They do a lot of research, mm-hmm. and in particular in relation to ministry, and recently looked at what pastors are doing in terms of social media. And so it says that as of 2013, 70% of churches use Facebook and 21% use Twitter. And in similar fashion, pastors that are using Facebook, 66% versus 23% using Twitter. And there's some other stats that are included.
Sounds about right to me.
So, yeah, interesting read as well. So it's not all about the graphics, but definitely want to link you to that article from Barna Group as well. Two more pins on our Pinterest board from Perry Lund at Grace in Oskaloosa, Iowa. I met Perry's wife at the LWMS convention.
Awesome.
So there's a Wells Tech connection there. Perry pinned what to know about the risk of social media, and in particular, this infographic called Social Media and the Law. And so just looking at the types of litigation around social media and kind of the exposure you might have using social media. The fact that employees maybe are sharing too much in social media, including confidential information, and also just kind of the learning gap associated with. So check out this infographic for more on social media and the law. And kind of along the same lines, another infographic, this one from educatorstechnology.com, and it's basically the risk of social networking. People that are sharing too much information online, I might fall in this category. It's kind of scary. It's fun to do. It's fun to check in and show where you're located, but that may be exposing to thieves that you're not at home and that they can come and rob you or whatever. Also, they make the point that a lot of times you share things like birthdays and other family members, you know, connections and things, your pets' names, your favorite books, and people use those to hack into your accounts, because oftentimes those are the security questions that are associated with your accounts. And so very good food for thought here regarding security and your social media presence. And so check out the risk of posting on social networks.
Nice.
And thanks, Perry posted that for us on a social network, just to be clear. All right. One more link that we want to share in our show notes is to a Google app called MoveNote. And this was a recommendation from our friend John Dorn, who teaches at Illinois Lutheran Schools. We had John on for an interview not long ago. He says he tried MoveNote app for the first time and he loved it. You can easily take a webcam video of yourself to show and explain documents. The app shows the documents and the videos side by side.
That's a different nice.
You also have the ability to perform some annotation of your documents using the presentation. Very slick. So this is for those teachers that are considering options for flipping your classroom and being able to share information with your students in a reasonable way. Finally, I want to make mention of an email we received from Pastor Joel Panko, and he was asking about whether we actually had curated a list of videos that might be useful to pastors and teachers in teaching settings. And this is something we hadn't considered before, Martin. I think it's a great idea. He writes, have you ever discussed or set up a type of video hub for pastors or teachers to use, teasers for Bible class, etc.? I sometimes download videos from YouTube to compare what other religions teach about baptism, etc. I imagine other pastors or teachers do the same thing. It would be neat to have a hub with a tag on it where you could easily access these types of videos that illustrate something, for instance, something related to the First Commandment. Download it to a central place, tag it as such. And he wondered if we could kind of facilitate that through Wells Tech somehow. Great idea.
I like the idea. I really do.
Not sure what to do with
Wells,
it.
On Wells Tube.
So if our listeners have ideas.
Put it on the list. I think that's something that we should talk further about as we live in this age where video is really become more important in websites, in even in worship and in Bible study and obviously in the classroom. This kind of thing is really necessary.
So thanks for the idea, Pastor, and we will be back in touch as we consider how to implement that.
Cool. Maybe after Synod Convention. We can think that. that's where a lot of things are going these days on my list, after Synod Convention list.
Yeah, that's a little mountain that's still ahead of you, huh? And me too. I'll be there too.
Yeah, speaking of Synod Convention, that is coming up, and we want to make sure everybody's aware that that's going to be episode 300, and Sally and I will once again be in the same room at the same time. We'll be doing it from the convention floor, so you want to make sure that you tune in to that, maybe even live, or if you're in the area, stop by. We've got, we're hoping to have a number of interviews, and I'm excited.
Should be a lot of fun, a great celebration.
Yeah. Next week, Sally, we are continuing with chapter 4. Of our book, content for church and school websites. And we'll be focusing on events and announcements. Probably the one of the big draws for internal members, for members of the church or school, because that's one of the reasons that they come to that site is, hey, what's going on? What's the latest? So events and announcements is next week. So
yeah, I'd say it's not your grandma's church newsletter anymore. It's,
that's right.
It's a live, immersive experience, and you can do a lot with it on your website. So looking forward to that.
Cool. Let's close the show, Sally, with the music of Dawn Michelle Williams, her song, Where I Belong. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will talk to you next time.